Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran, and we are the co-authors of The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap, with our colleague Stephen Slate.
We want to tell you quick about our solution to addiction coaching packages. They've become very popular. We've had really great success with them. They include the solution to addiction workshops, and we have one for substance use specifically, and then we have one for behavioral issues, specifically PMO and sex addiction. And they also include 3 90-minute coaching sessions with either Mark or myself, and 3 months of the online program, and all of our books. The Solution to PMO and Sex Addiction book is now available with our Solution to PMO and Sex Addiction workshop only. And look at the coaching package is a tremendous value. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to thefreedommodel.org. And at the top of the page, you can choose whichever one you're looking for.
That's right. It's the most effective solution to any addiction in the world.
It is. Well, today, what we want to talk about is I had a coaching session yesterday, and then I had a call. And it's amazing to me how insidious the 12-step program is interwoven into our culture. People don't even realize it. Even people that leave AA or NA that call us will call us about their other addictions, and they don't even realize that the entire addiction disease mythology, like this whole idea that you're powerless, came from AA.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to different people about spending money, going into debt, where somebody recommended to her that she go to Debtors Anonymous, even though they knew she had left AA. And then a woman who had left AA was talking about, you know, having a love addiction, and not even realizing, you know, when I said something about, well, maybe you need some deprogramming, she's like, oh no, I left the 12-step program. I don't need to deprogram from it. I'm like, well, if you believe you have an addiction with these other things, then yes, you do.
Yeah. So what you're talking about is sort of a systemic issue, right? An issue with society. And so the question becomes, how does somebody get to the place where the 12-step paradigm or this idea of powerlessness or addiction, which are all kind of part and parcel, becomes the way you frame your world? And I'm going to tell you fundamentally how this happens, because it's the big piece that's missing in every program but the Freedom Model, right? Yeah. And that is that you have a thinking mind and that decisions are made internally. So once you ignore that you are the operative force in your life, that you are guiding your life, whether that's down a bad road, a good road, or an indifferent road.
Right.
Once you go down the path where you ignore that you are it, that nobody owes you anything, nobody's going to make things easier for you, and that you have to make all the decisions and your whole life is predicated on what you think. If you don't understand that and really understand that and know it to be true, then you will farm out your whole life to other things that are external to you.
That's right.
You will place responsibility for your happiness into methods, sponsors, therapists, medications, big pharma, politics, geopolitical forces, circumstance.
Well,
right?
Not only that, but you will place, even outside of the addiction recovery space, you're still placing responsibility for your happiness on a relationship,
right?
On a substance, right? On an activity that you're doing, whether that's shopping or gaming, or you're looking for something outside of you to make you feel good internally. And it outside of brief moments of pleasure with different things, that good internal feeling is all you.
Right. Right. And so what happens when you do this, when you place your happiness into the opinions of others and all these different models, is they're in control now of this, of the narrative in your life. So all of a sudden, but then you'll double down. You'll mm-hmm. double down and you'll say, well, maybe I need a different type of meeting. Maybe I need a different type of coach. Maybe I need a different type of method to make me happy. And it's so funny because the freedom model, people come into it. They come into the door, right, of the freedom model, and they say, and with the expectation that there's something that's going to happen to them.
Yes.
And as they're going through the coaching process or one of our workshops, there's a strange but awesome moment. And I know you've seen it a million times, as have I, where they go, oh, this is, I get to choose. I'm it. It's really just what we're talking. There are no tools. I said, right. There's nothing. There's no external thing. There's just you making decisions for yourself and analyzing the utility or the futility of previous options that you've been living with. So when people get that, but sometimes it might take a full three sessions, sometimes four sessions, for them to read the book and go, oh my God, this is about data and then me deciding for myself what I want and how to change it. And that's for somebody that's been in the system, right? The treatment system.
Yeah.
The 12-step paradigm, being influenced by Netflix, for God's sakes, and TV and the internet and social media and you're literally being fed from the outside how to behave, how to look, what you should be thinking. And nobody is saying, hey, did you know you have a mind of your own?
Right. And that it's all up to you. I mean, the idea of feeling guilty for how you spend your money that you're earning, that there's good and bad things you can spend your money on, right? That's nonsense. Yeah. It's your money. You've earned that money, you get to spend it how you want. Now,
so you're talking about a coach that's one of these financial coaches.
Yeah, financial coach. Now, look at if you need a financial coach that'll help you to earn more money, great. But if you go to a financial coach and you say, well, I'm driving myself into debt. I seem to be spending uncontrollably. And the first thing they say to you is, well, maybe you should go to a debtors anonymous.
Meanwhile, you're paying them.
You're paying them. It's like, you're part of the reason that I'm in debt, right?
It's awesome.
I don't get it.
It's awesome. So, what a model.
Yeah. No. There are, I think when you start to frame things in, there are good decisions and bad decisions, as in like good and evil, good versus evil. You start to frame things in that way. The evil things become a little bit more alluring for some people, and taboo becomes a little bit more alluring. And so then you start into your decision-making process, you start adding in things that are inconsequential, really, that are just skewing your decision-making process and making you feel like you're a hapless, powerless victim of some force that's pushing you to this bad option.
Well, once you go into the bad direction, what that is soft moralism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have an opinion about morality, because morality is a moving target. I have my moral code.
Yep, me too.
I know Michelle has one. I think all human beings have their own moral code, what is they deem is right and wrong. But sometimes if you're bludgeoning yourself, I call it soft moralism. You're bludgeoning yourself with this is bad. I shouldn't be doing this. Right. Once we get into that, you're missing the mark. That will pull you so far from the freedom model, because the freedom model is based on looking at every decision you make, not in the good and bad lens. Because if you look in our book, that you won't find those words, good and bad. What you'll find is, are you happy? And what is the utility and futility of it?
Exactly.
And on what spectrum does it serve you and those around you? And ultimately, you're going to do what makes you happy, irrespective of what's going on in your life. You're going to decide what you like. So once you go, well, that's bad, you've taken the analysis away from deciding, does it actually make me happy?
Yeah. Does it serve me?
Yeah. So that's why I tell people you temporarily have to pull your morality off the case. Now, here's what's interesting. If you have a decision that you have deemed as bad, morally bad, because that's what moralism is, and you place the moral part of it on a shelf and you ignore that, and then you do the analysis, and in the analysis you find it doesn't make you happy, then your moralism is fulfilled. That's a bonus.
Exactly.
Or you find out by putting your moralism over here, this really does serve me, and maybe my moral code was incorrect.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's really important not to throw everything into the good and bad categories where you're going to spin, because that can't promote an analysis, a proper analysis, as to does this serve me and make me happy and provide me something that improves my life. So that's really an important point.
Well, and I can hear the comments coming in that are like, so you think we should just do whatever the hell we want to do? You think people should just go about willy-nilly? If I feel like killing somebody, I should kill somebody.
Well, here's what's interesting. Yeah, that's people do jump to like extreme cases.
Like hedonism.
Right. But you're doing what you want to do anyway. So you're doing what you want to do anyways.
That's the point.
So right now you're doing exactly what you think is best for you. And they say, no, I'm shooting heroin. I'm PMOing all day. I'm doing all this stuff. And I said, well, yeah, but you want to. And saying it's bad isn't an analysis. That's a moral judgment.
And it's not changing what you're doing.
Because it's not an analysis.
It's not an analysis. You're not deliberating. You're feeling like a victim of some force that's making you do this thing that you shouldn't be doing. And so there's a difference between, and this is where I go with, if you're thinking about a behavior and you're going into it thinking, I shouldn't do this, erase that. Erase that I shouldn't do this and say, I want to do this. Why do I want to do this?
Yeah, you see how you shift, you put the moralism under the shelf, and then what you do is you say, okay, I do want to do this because your actions belie your inner truth. And when I'm coaching people, we go through this in a whole variety of ways.
Absolutely.
I have to figure out a lot of times, and Michelle does this too, we build the puzzle, and you have to figure out what works with somebody. How are they thinking? Like, what is their thought pattern? And so we ask a ton of questions. And then once you figure out how they learn, then you go, okay, so can I walk them to admit that what they're doing, they're liking at some level?
Right.
Because if I can't get them there, then the moral cloak will overshadow the whole thing. And they're like, no, I'm just bad. Well, that's fucking useless. Okay. I mean, I can't work with you're a bad person. Right. That's never going to work, because that's not an analysis. I'm going to say this over and over again. People always want to go to, I shouldn't want this. I hate that I like this, or
I shouldn't like this. This is something I can't do this anymore. Right. Like, that's a big one. It's like, I'm killing myself. Like, my liver is failing. I can't keep drinking. And it's like, I get that you have liver problems. I get that it's negatively impacting your health. So do you. you understand that it doesn't matter to you. You're willing to pay those costs because you like it so much. So if you like it that much, let's go there, because that's where we can work with.
It's wild how much society's judgments, the treatment industry's massive, massive judgmental attitude and mythology, all of this guides people into this horrible bin where they can't see the fact that they're enjoying at some level this habit. And until you can admit that, analyze it, look at it, embrace it. Now, sometimes with habits that are relatively harmless, it depends on the habit. I tell people to embrace their habit.
Yeah.
I'll have a session with them and then I'll say, you need to, what's your assignment? Your assignment is to embrace it and then ask yourself why you like it. And they go, you want me to do it?
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, you're going to anyway.
Aside. Set the shame aside.
Yeah.
Set the shoulds and I can't and set all that aside. And you're going to do it anyways. So do it, embrace it, enjoy it.
And then figure out why you do.
Exactly. What is it I like about this? What, without judgment. You ask that question without judgment, because a lot of times people will do that and they'll sit there all the while in the back of their mind thinking, I shouldn't like this, while they're trying to figure out why they like it. Right. No, set that aside. It doesn't matter,
right?
Whether you should or shouldn't like it. It doesn't matter. It hasn't mattered to you. So you can choose to set it aside so you can make a proper analysis.
Yeah.
Which is the key. It's definitely the key. So now when I started this, what I was thinking is, so if you're somebody that's left the 12-step program, maybe you've even deprogrammed to a certain extent. Maybe you're in one of these, you know, in the deprogramming group, or you got our course. We have a 12-step deprogramming course. And you know, but you're still looking at other behaviors that you're doing. Maybe you've solved your alcohol problem or your drug problem, but maybe you're looking at another behavior, you're shopping, or the way you are in relationships, or whatever it is, and you still have that addict mentality, that addict identity of, well, I always screw these things up because I'm broken in some way, because I'm compelled in some way. Well, then you still have a belief system that you're not the one in charge.
Yeah.
You know, and so the book, our book, and really, and somebody said this, our podcast from last week, somebody said this, which I was really impressed with on our YouTube channel. They said, so you basically explained the positive drive principle in a different way.
Yeah, that is smart. That is smart. Yes. It's the last week's podcast was a practical application and a different way of trying to figure out, you know, a problem. Solve a problem.
You are always, that's the thing. People gloss over the positive drive principle. It's everything. You're always moving in a direction that you believe will make you happier in any given moment. That's what you're seeking. You're seeking, whether that's comfort, whether that's relief from some stress you're having, happier can be one small step above where you are at that moment. And while you may not, you know, you may, happier too, maybe drinking a bottle of wine that night, you may hate, you know, the fact that you're going to feel crappy in the morning.
Well, that's what people end up pointing to.
Yeah.
They end up pointing to the consequences and the pain of their choices. And it's really an interesting phenomenon. It really comes down to where your analysis and focus is. If you focus on costs, and usually when I'm coaching somebody, they always switch the conversation back
always
to costs.
Can't help it. It's so ingrained in them.
Yeah. That they want to self-flog themselves and really just delve into, I shouldn't want this. So it starts with moralism because of the pain I'm in. And instead of going backwards all the way to, wait a minute, what caused the pain? It was the fact that I'm going to do it in a different way, not with heroin or something like that. I'm going to do it with race car driving. What caused me to lose my family after all the medical bills, after I crashed the car? they tend to look at this event of the catastrophic crash and medical bills and the stress and it destroyed the marriage. And they look at all of that and they say, I hate race car driving. I can't believe what the racing industry did to me. But you raced a car for a reason.
Right.
And what's ironic is almost all of those guys will end up back in a race car, you know, just like the heroin user ends up with a needle in their arm again. Just like the guy who cheats on his wife ends up with a third wife and he cheats on her. And so what happens is people are focusing on the wrong thing. They're focusing on the results, the downstream ramifications. But you're not really looking at those ramifications at the beginning. And here's my point. You always have to go back to, why do I like racing cars? If you're going to look at the aggregate experience, the whole thing, and say, man, I don't have good sponsors, race car driving. I have all these medical bills. I lost my wife. My kids are pissed at me. I'm now in a wheelchair. All these things can happen, right? But if we don't go all the way back to the beginning, that person will be now in a handicapped racing series, which they have, by the way. So the analysis has to go, wait a minute. I'm willing to pay all these prices when I'm doing it.
Right.
I am. I know a guy that died race car driving. I obviously got in the car with that knowledge. I still got in the car. Why? Now you may find out, well, you know what? I'm not even sure I like race car driving that much anymore. I thought I did. You know, but it's not that exciting to me. And I don't think I'm willing to pay that price anymore. But unless you go to the beginning motive, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I'm going to use the analogy of debt, right? So you have these credit cards and you go out and you're spending money on different things. And so you're spending more than your means, than what you make. And you're extending yourself, going to debt. And every time the bills come in, you're like, oh, why did I spend that money? Why did I spend that money? But here you are that same day. You'll go out, you'll look in your bank account, and you'll be like, oh, I don't have enough money for this. I'm going to get it anyways, right? And you'll keep on doing it. So you start to feel like there's something wrong with me. No, there's not something wrong with you. There is, in that moment, you miss the analysis of, do I really want to spend that money? And because most of the time, it's less about what you're buying and more about the fact that you want to buy something. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, you're not, you might be thinking to yourself, oh, I can't spend, you know, my credit card debt is getting too big. And so now you're focusing on the end result and not on the decision at hand, which is, what am I going to get? If I'm getting this, what am I going to get from it?
Yes.
What is the value I see in spending this right now? Money that I don't really actually have on hand. Or maybe you're going through savings willy-nilly, or maybe you're one of these people that wins the lottery
and is poor 2 years later.
Yeah. What am I getting from spending? So it's all the same decision-making process. But when you start to put shame and guilt and good and bad, and you hang all of this stuff on these behaviors, which are, by the way, everyday normal behaviors that people choose to do, instead of looking at it as, you know what, this is, I get to do what I want. This is my debt. It's my money. I get to do with it what I want. And really, then you can make the proper analysis of, do I really want to spend this right now?
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
I don't.
And that's freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom is knowing, here, I'm going to tell you what freedom is. Freedom is knowing that all the control in the universe lies within your thoughts.
Yes.
And you may not understand what I just said. You may not.
Say it again.
That all freedom lies in knowing that all freedom is in your thoughts.
Everything, you're free in your mind, yeah, always.
You get to choose how you think and analyze situations. You get to frame out and have ultimate control over your choices based on what you really believe about the options. But if you're not analyzing properly, if you haven't been taught that, If you've been fed your whole life through a social media feed and you just don't know how to critically think, I understand that. That's a common human experience today. You know,
it sure is.
If you lived in a third world country, it's a little different though. And maybe didn't have internet access or any of these avenues. You might be fed by your government if it's tyrannical, but let's say that you're out in the bush, you're just living your life, figuring out how to be happy. And those people tend when they do happiness scores, they tend even with lack of water, lack of hygiene, lack of antibiotics, all these things that we take for granted, they score much happier happiness scores overall. And there's all kinds of studies on this. So what it comes down to is self-efficacy and the knowledge that I do have control over what I think, and therefore I have control over what I do. And I always go to extreme examples of like Viktor Frankl and these people that are imprisoned in prison camps found ways to be happy, even though their bodies are confined and tortured. And you know, that's clear examples of the difference between environment, body, and your mind. You know, you have this physical being in a physical environment, which can be very, very sad and painful. You could have cancer, you could be confined, you could be, all kinds of bad things can happen in the physical realm. But in your mind, you get to choose how you interpret all of that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because what I was thinking about when you were talking is, you know, when we live in abundance and we have so many options, mm-hmm. ironically, people tend to have more problems. That's, like we call them first world problems, right? Like you almost create chaos and in this country here in most of the Western world, right? People live in enormous abundance and have unlimited options from which to choose from. But if you live in poverty, you do see people tend to be happier overall with less, because they have like, they do what's right in front of them. And so there's not all this deliberating to do. The irony is there's this idea that if you live in poverty, you have greater problems with addictions. But when you look at third world countries, they don't. In this country, poverty, so to speak, yeah, maybe there's more drug problems, but those are usually centered in communities where the drug business is huge and creates wealth.
Right. It's a social norm.
Yeah.
The guy on the corner is a social norm where it doesn't fit in suburbia, for example. So I also don't want to paint a picture in this conversation. I can hear people saying, well, poverty is awful. And some of it is.
Terrible.
And there are pockets in the world, big pockets, where poverty, they score extremely low too. But I guess the point is, to Michelle's point, is you get to choose based on your circumstances, and it's not black and white. It all comes down to, if you look at poverty for an example, how you view it, what is the cultural norm around it, what is the government's involvement with it, you know, and these different factors. But the point is, it all always ends up coming back to what the culture thinks about it and how they frame it. And there's an interesting study where they took people and they had a problem and they were given options. And as they increased options, there was an optimum point where the person was the happiest. And I can't remember the number of options, but it's relatively low. And then as they increase the number of options, the happiness scale goes down, anxiety rises. And so a lot of times people will say, you know, happiness is because you don't have any options in poverty. You're cornered. But the reality in a lot of cases is, as people become more affluent and have more options and are bombarded with options, they become increasingly anxious and miserable. So now that's not the case in all cases.
No, so it just depends on how you frame things.
That's it. So what the freedom model is all about, and all, if you look at what we're saying, is it really comes down to how you see your circumstances, how you interpret it, how you frame it, how you decide to make decisions in it for yourself. Now, when you become really aware of what makes you happy and the value of that option compared to the value of the next option compared to the value of the next one, when you start to figure out how to analyze that out of the moral code, out of right and wrong, but more, does this serve me and does it serve the people around me in a good way? Or is it going to harm me and harm those around me? Then you start to get into a real analysis that works.
Yeah.
And you can find happiness there. No matter what's going on, you will. And it's also a massively effective problem-solving capability that you build by doing this analysis. You can figure out problems very quickly because you're motivated. Once you figure out what you actually like, you become motivated in that direction. That's what addiction is all about. Addiction is just, I'm motivated to do this because I think it serves me. But then when you find out it doesn't actually serve you that way, you've easily let it go and move on.
That's it. I think that's a great place to stop.
Yeah, it's perfect.
We're getting way more concise. I mean, I suppose it's about time. This is episode 240. So thank you, everyone, for all of your comments, for listening to our podcast. Please, if you like this podcast, wherever you listen or watch, give us a 5-star rating. Share it with your friends. The Freedom Model is... we're going worldwide more than we already have. We want to proliferate everywhere. And we want people to know that you get to choose how you frame your world. You get to choose what makes you happy. You get to choose all of your behaviors. Everything you do is completely voluntary. Okay. It's just a matter of figuring out why you like it, figuring out your why. So if you're doing something while you're flogging yourself for doing it, while you're judging yourself harshly, maybe others are judging you harshly, set all that aside and just try and figure out, okay, what do I like about this? Is it really giving me what I think?
And if you're struggling with that, get the workshop.
For sure.
It's super affordable. And if you struggle after that, or you have a couple of nuances that you can't seem to grasp, have some sessions.
Yeah, contact us. You can call us at 888-424-2626. If you're in a different country, you add a 1, I believe. I'm not sure how all that works. Some countries can get through on our toll-free number. But if you can't, email us at info@thefreedommodel.org if you want to set up a time to talk with us to explore the opportunity of getting private coaching with us. We love working with people one-on-one.
All right, everybody, have a great day.
Thank you. See you next week.